Hi everyone! Welcome to the next episode of our in-house guest expert series, Rich Reflects with our work bestie, Crystal!
Yay!
So this will take place once a month for 6 episodes. And once again, you know, for this season, I've invited my dear friend, my mentor, and one of my inspirations, especially in the area of personal growth and development, Crystal, to come on board as our work bestie to answer all our questions around work. Thank you and welcome again, Crystal.
Very excited.
I am so excited for this episode because we've had a lot of questions that streamed in specially for you to help all of us through, you know, the different kind of work challenges that we're facing. So are you ready to get into it?
I can't wait.
Awesome. Okay, so this is our questions from the community. There's a lot.
Okay.
I have tried to group them together and also we'll just get through as many as we can. So the first question is, how do I continue to grow in my current role if my responsibilities remain the same?
Okay, this is a great one. And many companies actually hiring me to talk about career mobility. Career mobility is a concept whereby in the past, we used to think of our career as a career ladder, linear sort of thing. And then like after we earn our dues, then 2 years later, then we ascend to the next rung. But actually today in the modern world, it's no longer the career ladder, but the career matrix in which like sideways moves are as important as upwards or diagonal moves. It's like trying out different roles in different departments, maybe overseas experiences, stretch assignments, all these sort of things. Because right now, what we're really finding people want in their world of work or their career is to have a career portfolio where you have a whole bunch of competencies, skills, and life experiences that are from your career. And that doesn't necessarily mean doing the same old thing and then like progressing up the job ranks. And in fact, many companies come to me and they say that they have problems looking for leaders or CEOs that are capable of leading the company because there are not many people who actually have the breadth of experience.
I was going to say like go wide, but most of them are more specialized in that sense, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the first thing I would say is that, you know, think about your career like a portfolio of how can you actually accumulate more strengths, more competencies, and, you know, more experiences, types of experiences. So for example, even if I didn't get a promotion, can I actually have a stretch assignment working on a different type of project? So if I've always been doing data analytics, can I do something people-facing now? Or for instance, can I collaborate with another department to do some sort of project so I'm exposed to that other department, sales or marketing or something else when I've been doing data analytics, for example? So there's many different kinds of ways in which you can expose yourself to new growth and learning and actually increase your market value.
Yeah.
So even if you didn't get a promotion, you can ask, for instance, can I be seconded to another department for a while? Can I work on a project with another part of this organization? So if I'm a data analytics, for example, can I work with marketing on something and gain exposure to new skills? Or you can look at it like, are there any overseas opportunities?
So it's also like taking it and in our own hands, right? Be active about it instead of passive, right? Ask for opportunities and expand our responsibilities in whatever ways, even if it's, let's say, outside of work.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think that your career, you should always ask yourself, how much did I learn? How much did I grow over the past year? Some people tell me I have 10 years of experience. And then when I look at their CV and I see that they've just been doing the same old job for 10 years, I say, you don't have 10 years. You have 1 year times 10 times.
Wow.
So like, I feel like employers these days are very discerning when we look at candidates to join our firms. We look for what are the transferable skills, what are the competencies, how much potential do you have, and also how much experience do you have in diverse thinking and problem solving. And as you mentioned, Rachel, you mentioned that, you know, when you work with people who have interfaced with many different types of roles, many different kinds of people, they're just naturally better problem solving.
Yes, they are.
Yeah,
I think also, like, because what you shared earlier reminded me that, you know, I think some of the employees or candidates that I have or come across, I think those with a wider experience across maybe even different functions, right? They tend to have a broader kind of thinking. And I think this really values add to the way they strategize, to the way, like you say, they problem solve, and that is absolutely value adding to the company, the business, and of course to themselves ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like 80% of success is collaboration, right?
Yes, today especially.
Absolutely, especially today. It's like all about, I always say, is the move from ego system to ecosystem.
Wow.
So like, it's one of my favorite things to say, because in it, when we have a fixed mindset, we go into our ego system, like, what can I achieve for myself? What are you going to give to me? And it becomes very transactional. It's like, oh, okay, I won't share information with you, Rachel, because I want to look good. Why should I like give off myself and that sort of stuff? But then when we actually move out of ego system thinking to ecosystem, it's kind of like, how can I contribute? How can I add value? How can I be of service? How can I be generous with boundaries, of course?
Yeah.
But when you move into that ecosystem thinking and you're a team player, you'll be amazed at how many people want to sponsor you, want to support your success, want to have your back, will fight for you during bonus meetings and that sort of thing.
So moving on to the next question. So how do I know if I should move on to a new job?
I think rule of thumb, I always say, is that when you're thinking about that question all the time, that's probably
a sign,
you know, that your inner wisdom is really trying to send you a message that something doesn't sit right with you. And you are, you know, longing for something that's more aligned with your values. So I think that it's important to do a SWOT analysis. SWOT stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So it's a little bit like a strategy planning session. Like, you want to leave your job, but you're not sure whether it's, you know, the right decision.
Yeah.
You want to write down, what are my strengths? What are my marketable skills, my competencies? What do I have to offer? Then you want to write down what your weaknesses are. So maybe I haven't had much work experience. Maybe there's some sort of developmental areas. I got feedback that
I need to work on certain areas.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And then there's also like, then the third part is the opportunities. Like, okay, what kind of opportunities are there in this area? So for example, I actually, in my industry, a lot of people are pivoting to this other part, like, oh, using AI now or whatever it is, right? So there might be certain opportunities in your sector or in other industries that might be exciting. And then, of course, there's threats. Like, threats is like, if I continue in my particular industry, are there any threats to my industry? Or maybe there's lots of retrenchments, this tech winter now. If I stay here and I'm not proactively looking, maybe I would get cut or something. But really have these four columns and like, take stock of where you are at. And it will allow you to more intelligently, you know, figure out whether this is something where, wow, I have so many strengths and there's so many opportunities, it's a no-brainer. But if I have a lot of weaknesses or I haven't actually learned so much yet, I've only got 6 months of experience in my past three jobs. And maybe it's going to make me look like somebody who's not very serious if I keep on changing jobs every 3 months for the past four times then.
Yeah.
Or there's a lot of threats, you know, going on for me changing jobs. I don't have financial stability. I don't have all of this. Then you might want to reevaluate.
I love that. First and foremost, if we already find ourselves thinking about changing job pretty often, then, you know, we should definitely do something about it.
Yep.
Clarify our thoughts and emotions down by, like what Crystal shared, the SWOT analysis. And I think that will give us a lot more clarity on what the next step should be.
Yeah, I also think it's important to speak to other people and like have this sort of informal board of advisors.
Yeah, so in our lives,
in
right?
Our lives, like a circle of trusted people. And I would actually try to find people very different ages, different industries, different kind of backgrounds from you. Maybe just kind of like take them out for a coffee and take it as a research project. And say to them, like, hey, I'm at this career sort of like a point where I'm thinking about like reinventing myself or reimagining my career or trying something differently. And I wonder whether you had like 15 minutes to grab coffee, because I'd love to hear from you how do you see me and my strengths, and like what would you recommend for me?
Wow.
And if there are people who are really for you, like your friends and your network, like 80% of the time, I think they would be happy to do that. And what's even better is that sometimes a lot of them will actually make introductions for you. And
that's like invaluable.
An introduction is 1,000 times more valuable than applying through a jobs portal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if it came from somebody, it's like, wow, that person will give that person face by opening up the CV all of that.
Yeah.
So I think that this whole research experiment is like, how many people can I find that are willing to have, like, you know, coffee with me, give me advice, and also open up their black book of contacts and help me.
Yeah, so take proactive steps, reach out, do the inner work, you know, analyze deeply. And then I think that would also slowly lead us to the decision that we need to make.
Yeah.
The next question is, how do I manage an indecisive boss? He or she tends to say one thing but does another.
Yeah, there's two types of indecisive bosses. The first type is indecisive and they know they're indecisive. And the second type is like they're indecisive but they are very clueless and they think that they are very clear. Okay? So the first type is obviously a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, because they're already aware.
They are self-aware, right? So with the first type, you might want to give them options.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and you might want to also create some structure. So for instance, if my boss is truly clueless and indecisive, I might do some homework and go to my boss and say, hey boss, here's the situation now. I've identified three options, option one, two, and three. Here's the pros and cons of each option. And in my opinion, I would recommend going with option one, but happy to hear from you. So you're introducing some structure there. And then you might also want to kind of document it.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, every time you have a meeting with your boss, you send out like a meeting note or
a recap.
You know, these are what we agreed to. This is the next steps and everything so that you can refer to it in case they like forget.
Yeah. So it's also like setting yourself up for success, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. So for the next question we have, as a leader, how do I manage someone who is underperforming, yet supposedly has more years of experience than I do, and is also someone with a huge ego?
The perfect storm. Okay. So you are managing somebody who has more experience than you. And I think in Asia, also culturally, it's important to have gratitude for that, for their perspectives, and to engage them as an ally, and to be very clear with your intentions and be very sincere with them, and have a conversation, take them out in an informal setting. Generally for these people who, you know, are a little bit cagey because they are older, but then you're more senior. I don't like to do it across a meeting room table. It kind of emphasizes hierarchy and it makes people very stiff. So I would be more like, hey, you know, let's go and grab coffee. I've been meaning to pick your brain and ask some advice about a certain issue, right? Then I would take them out and walk side by side alongside them. So it's like collaborative, it's like informal, and say like, hey, you know, you've been around for 10, 20 years already, and I really respect your experience and your perspective on this, and say that, you know, I am currently dealing with these issues and I love to hear your opinions on it. And, you know, you don't have to say, I will be the final say on it.
Yeah.
But it's like the moment you ask someone for their perspective and their advice, they're going to feel...
They also feel better.
Feel better. They feel more involved with it.
And it matters, right? It matters for them. For me as well, in my experience, when I come across, like, especially people who are older, inexperienced, I think we need more time to also win them over.
Yeah.
Like you said, I really believe, like, taking them out, whether for lunch or coffee, you know, to get to know them as people, and to also kind of, like, be vulnerable and like asking them for like feedback, opinion, giving them a space to be seen and heard, because it matters a lot to them. Then I realized that they would be less defensive even when I need to give a feedback.
Yes, and I totally believe that the one-on-one approach is important before the group.
Yeah.
You know, before you are in that group meeting, and it's very hard to, like, you know, try to win people over in a group meeting because they have their face, they want to grandstand, they want to like show a certain way. But like, I would just take it offline so that they don't have an audience to play to. You said big ego, right? Big ego means they want to appear a certain way in front of other people. So even before we get to the group meeting stage, I will already, hey, let's go out for coffee sort of thing. And then it's easier to work with their egos when they realize that you're sincere and, you know, you are for them. You have their interests at heart.
Yeah, so take the time to build that relationship and invest in that. Yep. What happens if I've accepted a job and I actually really enjoy it, but the long-term prospects are meh?
My daughter says that all the time. That's so mid, mom. That's so meh. Okay, so there's jobs and then there's careers, right? Job is just like, you know, something that I'm doing that, you know, pays me money and it's very transactional. And then there's like careers and then there's like callings, right?
Yeah.
So for different people at different seasons of life, you know, they have different priorities. Like, not everyone wants a calling or amazing career. Some people, it's just like, for this season of life, I've got two young kids, and for this season, I would just like to have a job, you know, and maybe it serves me in terms of financial stability. And I've done the cost benefit analysis, and like, you know, it makes sense. I just want a stable paycheck, and in return, I do this, and that's okay for me. But it's important to be clear, like, what do I actually want out of work? At the very extreme level, some people want work to align with their values, to be like fulfilling, meaningful, to be, you know, they want to be passionate about work. And if that is what work means to you, then by all means, like, realize that the meh is not going to be enough for you and your character and this season of your life. However, if you are the kind of person that's like, oh, okay lah, but you know, right now my kids are my priority, and work is like, you know, number four out of my priorities, maybe meh is good enough. It's okay.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's such a reminder that I think it's so important to know what season that we're in, and to ultimately also then recognize that, you know, different seasons have different demands and expectations as well. How do I remain sane in a toxic environment? How would you, I'm very curious, how would you define a toxic environment?
Oh gosh, this is a very dramatic and loaded word.
And I find it overused, though.
It is. Yeah. It is quite overused sometimes. And, you know, I am guilty of saying it as well, because, like, on social media, it does get eyeballs.
Yeah.
People really relate to, like, oh, this is a toxic work environment. But, okay, there's different... on a spectrum of toxic, like, what I would truly define as toxic is workplace practices that are eroding your boundaries. Like, for instance, people asking you to do things which are unhealthy for you, working long hours 24/7, people asking you to do unethical things, people behaving in a way that's like really against your values or that any reasonable person shouldn't be expected to put up with. So that's like super toxic. So for example, many of my audience on IG write to me and they give specific examples like bullying, name calling, workplace harassment, you know, for some of them have, very common one is, my boss always wants me to go out for karaoke and drink with him, and he asks all the pretty girls in the office and then he makes sexist remarks. It's a very common one, you know, and that's definitely toxic.
Yeah.
So anything that's like crosses those professional boundaries. So how do you remain sane in a professional work environment that crosses those boundaries? I think the first thing is to be assertive. The first thing is to document these incidents. So it's very important that you don't just like, I have, forget it.
Such good advice, Crystal.
You need to document it, like have an Excel file or something. Record each date and each time of the incident, and also what you did about it. Did you give feedback? And I will always recommend that what you do is that as close to the incident as possible, you know, give some feedback about the impact of that incident. So for instance, if somebody made a sexist comment to you, you might, you know, during a meeting, you might pull them aside after the meeting or say that, hey, by the way, I wanted to quickly check.
So do it timely over the time.
Do it within 48 hours.
Got it.
So that that person is also respectful. Sometimes that person might be clueless.
Mm.
So you want to show that I have done everything I could. You know, I've given feedback to the other person and I said, by the way, that comment didn't sit well with me. I didn't feel that comment was appropriate or professional. Something like that, if it's a really toxic comment, right? So then what you're going to have is like, I would recommend that you have like 3 or 4 of these incidents if they are smallish incidents. Obviously, if it's a big incident, like somebody actually, whatever, please on the spot, go to HR, go on the spot. But if it's like microaggressions or like gray area sort of things where this person interrupted me while I was speaking, or this person maybe made a joke that was like not so tactful or something. So these are a gray area, smaller sort of incidents, I would say collect like three of them, and then you have established a pattern of behavior.
Right.
And then if giving feedback to that person hasn't worked, then I would say definitely talk to your boss about it. But if your boss is the person doing this, then you need to go to HR.
Directly,
and you need to show them like this is what's happened, and you need to ask them for some support. And if HR doesn't do anything, then it's time to really seriously consider if you want to stay in this toxic work environment or not. Currently, I would always say that it's your mental health, your emotional well-being, it's not worth it.
Yeah, because sometimes I can imagine how fearful or dreadful you might be, right? Going to office to work, or like just thinking about the interaction that you might have with whoever the aggressor or whoever it is.
For sure. And, you know, my husband, Greg, is a clinical psychologist, and he does see people with actual trauma or post-traumatic stress disorder from not leaving and staying in toxic environments for too long.
Or tolerating it.
Yeah, right? It actually can have severe impact on your mental health. Like, it can cause people to be depressed. Mm. It can cause them to develop panic attacks. We had a client that actually physically felt so nauseous she would vomit when she would
just
think,
the thought of it.
Just think about having to be in a meeting with this person. And we're like, why? Mm. Your life doesn't need to be like that. Nobody gives you a medal for suffering, you know? It's like there's plenty of well-paid, you know, well-respected jobs out there.
Yeah, and companies. So have the courage, please, to speak up.
Absolutely.
And we have one last question for this episode. So how can I be seen and heard more at work as an introvert, especially in a society where it seems like extroverts tend to have an easier time with this?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things I would recommend. Firstly, in a meeting, if you know you're going to be in a group meeting, you might want to prepare ahead like one insight to contribute in the meeting, but make sure that you are saying something that adds value.
Mm.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, when people think about you, and it's promotion time or bonus time, they're going to form impressions of you based on how you work with others. And, you know, it's important that you are also learning how to manage how you come across as a team player, as collaborative, as innovative, as creative, as, you know, somebody who's proactive. So that means advocating for yourself. Secondly, I would say that actually a lot of times us as Asians, we have this belief that it's like very haolian or what, arrogant or something to like market ourselves.
Yeah, or to just talk about what we did or achieved. Yeah.
And it's like sometimes we have this self-critical voice going like, oh, you're such a show-off if you say that. And it's important to reframe, because I think that by communicating clearly what you're about, that's actually an act of respect, not only to yourself, but to others. Mm. Because your boss is a busy person, the senior stakeholders are busy people, and they don't have time to be psychics and mind read and try to go through their brain and like think like, you know, what kind of person
who's doing what.
Yeah, and all
team
of that. Yeah. But if you are able to clearly articulate like during your conversations with them, you know, so I had some ideas about this. This is the last project I did. Here's what some things I felt that we can improve on. Mm. Sort of continually adding value for and making your suggestions clear to them. It actually is like you are being respectful of their time. Mm. And also of their headspace. And I think thirdly is also about energy. Whenever we enter a room, we are either raising the energy or lowering the energy or changing the energy in some way. Sometimes introverts are not conscious that, you know, that they may be appearing as low energy.
Mm.
Okay? And actually, it's not like you have to be Energizer Bunny and be like fake rah-rah or something. Yeah. But it is also respectful to bring a certain amount of energy and excitement or engagement with you to a meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like we are all in meetings all the time.
Yeah.
And like if everyone is like low energy, low mood, you know, it just doesn't contribute to productive problem solving.
Yeah, and positive energy really rubs off the other team members. I love it, Crystal, and it's really you also saying that be more conscious of how we come across and be more intentional in, you know, also giving off positive energy.
Yeah, and I think the last thing is also social capital. When we are going through our careers, we are not just getting skills and strengths and money and visibility. We are also amassing social capital, which is Like, imagine a bank account, and inside your bank account, you've got all these like relationships, like all these networks of people that you can call on, that you can ask for help, that you can go to, that you can collaborate with. And sometimes introverts forget that building that social capital bank account is very important, not only for your work and your career, but also for your mental health and your emotional and social support system. So it's like, okay, think about what's acceptable amount of time for you. Maybe one evening a week, go and have drinks with somebody. If that's out of your comfort zone, just give yourself like one small thing a week, coffee with someone, drinks with someone. But you will, most of the time, my introvert clients tell me that I actually built it up in my head to be more tiring
than it really is.
Yeah. But once I was in that situation, it was actually okay. It was actually good.
Yeah. So get out of our heads and then, you know, take a small step towards doing something like to build social capital.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Crystal. And that's all for this week's episode. If you have a question around work which you'd like to ask our work bestie, Crystal, please leave a comment on our Instagram post and page, Rich Reflects, or our YouTube video. And again, Crystal, where can we find you on social media?
I'm on TikTok, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and it's all under the handle at Crystal Lim Lange, L-A-N-G-E, and my website is deep-human.com.
Yes, and we'll share all the details in the show notes as well. So until then, see you for the next.
See you.